Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
It's Wednesday, October 10th, 2012, and this is KBIA's Views of the News, where each week we consider the news media's impact, for good or for ill, from our perch at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Mike McKean, director of the RJI Futures Lab, and here with me are regular panelists and Missouri School of Journalism colleagues Lee Wilkins and Charles Davis. PBS News anchor Jim Lehrer was just as aggressive with the presidential candidates last week as he was 4 years ago. At least that's the conclusion of one think tank. But the researcher concludes that Romney and Obama just ignored Lehrer more this time. The vice presidential candidates square off tomorrow night. The focus also turns to a new moderator, ABC's Martha Raddatz. The Obama campaign is attacking Romney with new ads based on the first debate, including ones with Andrea Mitchell and Big Bird, but those media celebs are crying foul. CNN, mired in third place, announces a new strategy, buying and airing documentary films. And network weatherman Sam Champion announces he's tying the knot with his boyfriend. Is 2012 the year the news media reaches the tipping point on same-sex marriage? Well, was it really only a week ago that President Obama and Mitt Romney debated at the University of Denver? So much has happened since then, but one thing's for sure, those pundits who predicted the media would resurrect Romney's campaign got it right. Well, the candidates clearly had something to do with that, but nearly every analyst gave the GOP nominee a clear win, and nearly every reputable poll showed him making big gains nationally and in the battleground states. If you're the president, you know you blew it when Saturday Night Live jokes you were less focused on your opponent than on your failure to buy Michelle an anniversary gift.
Let's see. They had a Denver Broncos sweatshirt. She might like that. The hotel has some nice bathrobes for sale. That could be good. World's greatest mom coffee mug. Everybody likes coffee.
Number 20.
Excuse me, Governor. Mr. President?
I'm sorry, what's up?
Mr. President, Governor Romney has just said that he killed Osama bin Laden. Would you care to respond?
No, you two, go ahead.
There were also plenty of critics who had it in for moderator Jim Lehrer of PBS. It started on Twitter, then from the president's spinmeisters, then from many, though and certainly not all, of the media analysts. At issue was whether Lehrer let the candidates, and especially Mitt Romney, take too much control of the debate. Well, Lee, did he?
I don't know how he could have done much more than he did. It's a very fine line, especially when you're dealing with people at that level. Do you interrupt? Do you say, I'm sorry, you're not answering the question I asked, which said enough, can sound very rude. When I thought as I was watching the debates that Mitt Romney actually took more time than President Obama did, that turns out to not have been the case. My suggestion has been that the next moderator, whoever he or she happens to be, shows up in a striped shirt with a whistle and acts basically like better than the replacement refs so that the candidates can actually be held accountable for what's going on.
Well, we'll get to the next moderator here in just a second, but here's how Jim Lehrer saw it when he was asked to defend his performance. The first few times I said, let's move on, and they wanted to keep talking. The inclination, of course, is to stop them so I could cover all the subjects I wanted to cover. But I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, they're talking to each other, leave them alone. So I backed off. Charles, that seems like a reasonable approach to a debate between presidential candidates.
Well, I'm not sure how, I don't know why it was so shocking that they were talking to each other. They were in a debate. I thought the format ate Jim Lehrer effectively. I don't really blame Jim Lehrer. I blame the format. If you think that two people who are running for the presidency of the United States are going to freeform it in 15-minute segments without a whistle, a red light, a beeper, I don't know, the camera going off, then you're kidding yourself. Whoever's talking is going to keep talking. They're going to talk right over the moderator. Especially, I think that Governor Romney was using his time. He didn't use any more time than Obama. He just used it a heck of a lot more effectively. And so the guy was rolling, and he kept rolling.
But why should the journalist be the focus of the debate, Lee? I mean, follow-up questions are important. I get that. But we very rarely are going to get to see these men debate each other. Why not let them debate? Give them fewer questions and more time to talk.
I think if they actually would debate, it would be fine. If they would engage each other's ideas, that's not what I saw happening on last week. I saw from both men a lot of assertions. This is what I would do. This is with very little follow-up on this is how I would do it, and certainly with very little on both sides. Again, I want to emphasize that, being held to account for. Really? You say you're going to do this now? What about the last 20 times we've got you on record saying exactly the opposite?
And is it important that we do that within the debate, given all of the post-debate analysis and news coverage that we're going to see? Because clearly there was no shortage of truth squatting, you know, Romney's claims and or the president's for that matter.
Well, I mean, that's part of the format as well, but it's also partially on the president. I mean, had the president called many of those assertions bluffs, which many of them were, I'm sure that Governor Romney, when he brought up the $760 billion Medicare lie, for example, expected to get into an engagement with the president over the veracity of that claim. I think he threw it out there fully expecting the president to push back. And for whatever reason, which no one will ever understand, the president just let it go.
I thought there was a little bit, Lee, of sort of instant analysis that was kind of interesting from Robert Lichter at the Center for Media and Public Affairs. He did some counting. And what he found was that, he says, Lehrer actually asked a few more challenging questions this year than he did from Obama and McCain back in 2008 when he moderated that debate. It's just, according to his study, Obama and Romney cut off or ignored Lehrer about three times more often. So what can the journalists do in that situation?
I think these were two people, and certainly this word has been used a lot about Romney, but Romney certainly was more aggressive. And I think when you've got a person there who's getting more aggressive, it behooves you to get a little bit more aggressive. I don't know any other way to meet it. There are some consequences to that. In response to what Charles said, I think that there was a lot of stuff going on, but not for an audience of 60 million. The people that you're going to reach, the folks who have just turned in, have turned into that debate. And unless you can find a way to include some honest back and forth and critique in part of that debate, you could have said the moon was made out of green cheese. And some people out there would have said, oh, yeah, right, that's a good platform plank.
Well, the next debate takes place, as we know, tomorrow night. It's between Vice President Joe Biden and Republican challenger Paul Ryan. Usually these Veep fights generate a lot of heat, but there's not much discernible impact that they have on the outcome of the elections. But the media are building this one up. The main theme is that Joe Biden needs to counter the president's poor performance. GOP strategist Steve Schmidt, for example, says Biden will, quote, be bringing his proverbial nunchucks and brass knuckles. Well, Charles, is it going to be that kind of an important debate? Are the media right to say that this is going to be more than passing importance in this competition?
No. I don't think so. I mean, it's a vice presidential debate. It is what it is. There'll be some attention paid to it, certainly more probably than in past years. I remember the Biden-Palin debate was played up as this mega titanic struggle, and it turned out to be much ado about nothing. I don't think either vice president is going to steal much of the presidential thunder, and they're probably under orders not to do so. But Biden will be much more, I mean, well, anyone would be more aggressive than the president was the other night. So I think Biden will be more aggressive than the president was the other night.
Well, and I think Ryan has a different goal, if you will. He needs to demonstrate to the American public that he's fully capable of being one heartbeat away from being the president of the United States. I mean, we say that a lot. I know it's a cliche, but it's true, and it's been true in my lifetime enough that's something that he's got to demonstrate.
Well, but surely not nearly as much as Sarah Palin needed to 4 years ago. But there is some truth to the notion that Ryan is a bit more of the focus in this campaign because a lot of the economic policies, at least arguably, that Mitt Romney is proposing or was proposing, at least up until the last debate, came from Ryan's budget. So does that mean, Charles, that he's going to get more specific questions? He's going to get pinned down more about these topics than perhaps Romney did?
Well, I think Biden will throw more assertions at him that he will have to battle back. I mean, I think for Ryan, he's got to hold serve. Right? Because, I mean, Romney performed extremely well in the first debate. He just needs to perform to level par. He doesn't have to exceed expectations. He has to meet expectations under what I imagine will be a fairly aggressive assault from the vice president. And it doesn't hurt that in at least, what, three massive policy areas, Romney has suddenly veered toward the center left in the last week. So that's giving Biden a great deal of ammunition from a policy perspective.
Okay, Charles, I'll buy center but not left. And
I don't know.
I want to go back to something that Mike said because, Mike, I agree about the Sarah Palin thing only up to a certain point. In both cases, these people had to demonstrate that they had gravitas. And I don't think that changes from one election cycle to another.
Well, Paul Ryan clearly comes, I don't know if he has gravitas or not, but he comes across as someone who certainly sticks to his guns when he's confronted by journalists. In fact, he had a minor dust-up with a Flint, Michigan TV reporter this week who pushed back on Ryan's answer to a question about gun control.
But the best thing to help prevent violent crime in the inner cities is to bring opportunity in the inner cities, is to help people get out of poverty in the inner cities, is to help teach people good discipline, good character. That is civil society. That's what charities and civic groups and churches do to help one another make sure that they can realize the value in one another.
And you can do all that by cutting taxes, by with a big tax cut.
Those are yours, not mine.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That was kind of strange.
You're trying to stuff words in people's mouths?
Well.
And I think people made too much initially of that confrontation. It wasn't really as confrontational as some people led you to believe. Still, Lee, you could say that Ryan was a bit testy, or you could also say that reporter was maybe just a touch disrespectful.
And I wouldn't go with either of those things. As a former political reporter, I would say that reporter did something that was incredibly stupid. He let Ryan change the subject on him, and he never came back and said, "Sir, you did not answer my question." Trust me, I've made that mistake so many times, it's humiliating, but hopefully I've learned not to do it.
But on the question of, I mean, I watched the whole thing, and the video is up for our listeners and viewers if they'd like to see it. We just played an excerpt of it, but I thought that he gave a very full answer, I mean, but from his perspective, about how gun control never works, et cetera. It's really all about these other programs. But, you know, it did seem to me, Charles, that the reporter could have asked a follow-up other than sort of, oh, so you're going to do all of that with budget cuts? I mean, that's just prompting Ryan to not take the question seriously.
Well, it also had nothing to do with any of the previous questions. It just came out of clear left field. And then, of course, their use of it on the backside to kind of gin up the controversy on air is just tawdry.
Yeah. Well, the moderator for this vice presidential debate, as we mentioned, is ABC News senior foreign affairs correspondent Martha Raddatz. And given all the talk about Jim Lehrer in the first debate, there's a bit more focus than usual, perhaps, on how Raddatz might perform. So, I mean, Lee, from what we know about her or what we've been reading in the past little bit, what might we expect from Martha Raddatz?
I hope, as my former interviewing teacher used to say, that she eats steak for breakfast if she's not a vegetarian because she's going to need it. I suspect for a lot of reasons, and including just who she is as a person, that there's going to be, at least initially, a greater attempt to try to control the debate and to set the tone in such a way that by the time it gets away from her, because I think that's pretty much inevitable, you've at least got, a half an hour or maybe even as much as 45 minutes where she's been able to steer the conversation.
Well, we may disagree on what's the more effective, you know, style for the debates and whether the reporters should get in the way or out of the way. But I wonder, Charles, if she and CNN's Candy Crowley, who's going to be doing the next presidential debate, have to somehow prove that they're tougher, especially in light of Lehrer, but also maybe because of the gender issue.
I think they're going to get the benefit of the post-Lehrer bounce where, I mean, at least Biden and Ryan, I think it'll be like a Chip and Dale act. They're both going to be like, after you. No, after you. And they're going to sort of out-polite each other. So I think she's going to benefit from that immensely. Now, the second presidential debate will be a tough wrestling assignment.
And it's also, Lee, going to be the town hall debate where Candy Crowley has less of an opportunity, I suppose. chose to ask her own tough questions and follow up. So is that going to be an unfair advantage if people are trying to measure her against Lehrer or Raddatz?
I think in a way it is, because I think the formats actually matter. What I'm worried about is that the presidential candidates, Mr. Romney and Mr. Obama, will do the same thing to the voters who usually ask somewhat general questions, as they will just take sort of the word cue, you know, health, and they will launch into whatever set of assertions there are already pre-programmed to launch into, and we won't learn very much.
What about this sniping from Michael Massing in the Columbia Journalism Review? We've posted his article on our site that Raddatz is too pro-military, or on the other side from the Daily Caller saying that she's biased somehow against Republicans because she was married a long time ago to an Obama appointee and that the president might have attended their wedding. So what?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I mean, it's like people are going into genealogy charts now saying there was a Democrat in the family in 1693. It's absurd. I mean, this is a woman who's proved over a long career that she is a serious, aggressive, questioning, critical journalist in a variety of contexts. And so I just think the charges are utterly absurd.
Charles, it was a great comment about genealogy. Something here is, yeah, I'm the child of two Republicans. Not a lot you can say about that.
Well, both the Romney and Obama campaigns have used their first debate as fodder for campaign ads in the swing states, but most of the media attention has been on two ads from the president's camp. The first one used a clip from MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell to challenge Romney's truthfulness on his tax plan. Mitchell and her network objected.
You should know that NBC News has not granted either campaign permission to use our news material and immediately requested that the campaign refrain from using NBC News material in this and future advertisements. In this case, the Obama commercial uses only a short clip from a Truth Squad report that in fact pointed out exaggerations and or misstatements that both candidates had made during the debate.
The Obama campaign's other ad involved an even bigger media celebrity, Sesame Street's Big Bird.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Bernie Madoff, Ken Lay, Dennis Kozlowski, criminals, gluttons of greed, and the evil genius who towered over them? One man has the guts to speak his name.
Big Bird. Big Bird. Big Bird.
It's me, Big Bird.
Big, yellow, a menace to our economy. Mitt Romney knows it's not Wall Street you have to worry about. It's Sesame Street.
I'm going to stop the subsidy to PBS.
Mitt Romney, taking on our enemies no matter where they nest.
Well, that's a lot of fun, of course, but the producers of Sesame Street have also called on the Obama campaign to pull the Big Bird ad, saying they're, quote, a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization, and we do not endorse candidates or participate in political campaigns. Well, so, Charles, is the law on the side of NBC in the Sesame Workshop, or is there plenty of wiggle room in the fair use laws as far as it involves commercial works where people are making comments on TV programs?
There's all the room in the world under the fair use doctrine for both ads to use what are called bona fide news footage or small images of Big Bird. It puts networks, it puts Sesame Street workshops in very difficult positions, and I think they almost have to go through this sort of kabuki theater of, oh, we protest mightily the use of this, because they know there's nothing legally they can do about it. They just have to disavow it publicly.
Well, this isn't the first time, Lee. I mean, just in this campaign, Tom Brokaw and Bob Schieffer also complained when they were used in Mitt Romney ads. And it seems to me like there's nothing they're going to do about it. And I doubt that the Obama campaign is going to pull either of these two spots.
I doubt it in part because at least the second one I found very clever. It's clever on a couple of levels. The first one is just Big Bird, but the second one is, and this is when some of the stuff that you posted on the blog, Mike, I think is really helpful. Buried way down in the bottom paragraph of the Detroit Free Press piece that's up there is what for me was the significant thing, which is this is how much money Congress allocates to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting per year. I don't understand why that gets buried in a story that is precisely about this sort of cut and has to be in the very last paragraph as opposed to much more up towards the top of the story.
I agree with you on that particular story, but I almost wonder, in fact, whether or not that PBS and public broadcasting in general is going to benefit more than the Obama campaign from that ad. I mean, this was an opportunity that some people said might have made the president look a little silly. We can debate that, but certainly it raised the profile for people who are arguing that public broadcasting needs to be protected from budget cuts.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when internet memes are leading the news, but I saw better internet memes about Big Bird that I did news coverage. I saw one, in fact, just a couple of nights ago that said that the annual allotment to the Corporation for Public Broadcast equals, I think it's 6 minutes of military spending. I thought that was fascinating. That's the sort of work that, I think journalists might ought to do.
Well, it is the sort of work that journalists ought to do, and I'm quite frankly puzzled that we aren't doing it and doing it consistently. Not just about these proposals, okay, because they're minuscule in terms of the financial discussion that we're having, but about a lot of the others that aren't so minuscule.
I thought there was an interesting take by David Dayan over at the liberal blog Fire Dog Lake. He pointed out in this Big Bird ad, and I thought it was really interesting, none of the corporate excesses that are mentioned in that, you know, Bernie Madoff or Enron or whatever, none of them mentioned anybody that was actually prosecuted by the Obama administration for fiscal fraud.
Mm-hmm. Or the W one, for that matter.
Yeah.
Lay was, but criminally. Not through administration rules and regulations. I think the entire debate, however, is really interesting because you get to the point where Big Bird, you know, is this emblem of the Sesame Street workshop. The workshop is part of CPB, and it becomes just political headhunting, I think. I mean, the amount of money becomes irrelevant because it just becomes a partisan skin to hang on the wall.
Yeah. Well, let's focus on something other than the presidential campaign in our remaining minutes. We've talked for some time now about the dilemma facing CNN. For years, Fox News has beaten them in the ratings, but in the past year or so, MSNBC has also pushed ahead of the original cable news channel. CNN has tried a variety of strategies to regain audience. They've bragged about their supposed lack of bias and their willingness to plague political coverage down the middle. They've hired celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain to produce a new kind of reality-based program. Some even say the Situation Room's Wolf Blitzer bought new glasses to make him look more hip. But CNN's latest announcement could have more lasting impact. They're going to buy documentary films from well-known directors with plans to air them on television at the same time the movies are released in theaters. CNN has produced its own documentaries, of course, but now it's tapping these independent producers. And the first movie to be released, Lee, is called Girl Rising. It's coming out next spring. It's about several young women around the world who face huge hurdles trying to get an education. Well, how big a deal is this, both in terms of CNN's performance, but also in exposing more documentaries to more people?
In terms of CNN's performance, I honestly don't think it's going to make much difference. I wish I could say that it would. In terms of what it's going to do for the documentary community, I'm hardly the expert to ask here. We have two folks in town who would know. So let me say a couple of things. I think it's going to help some kinds of documentaries find a home. I think those are going to be documentaries by and large that kind of play it down the middle, that sort of take safe approaches to a lot of public issues in the United States as opposed to other countries in the world. It's a pretty safe approach to build a documentary around young girls who are having a difficult time getting an education. I would not probably say the same right now about Pakistan or Afghanistan. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. The documentaries that are sort of trying to push the envelope or push the edge of what documentary film is all about or can be all about, I'm not sure that they're going to find a very comfortable home on CNN. I think we're going to be seeing them more at True False, just like we always have.
Well, and I don't know, Charles, if whether or not that has to be the way. We don't know what CNN's going to do until they buy them and they air them. But you have to wonder if they did run those kinds of really edgy documentaries, which by their very nature have a point of view, if that wouldn't somehow conflict with the other marketing message they're having out there, which is that we're playing it down the middle. We're unbiased.
Well, it depends on what they are, right? I mean, if they go global, and like Girl Rising sounds like a truly globalist film, the point of which is everyone deserves an education, which isn't really a partisan message, I hope, at this point in the United States. And if they stay at that level, they can stay quite sort of down the middle, I think, with a globalist approach. I am really excited about it from a perspective of opening more documentaries to more people. Right. I think that documentaries deserve wider airing than they get currently. They're very art house Their releases are limited, you know. But you notice they're creeping into more theaters. Undefeated, for example, a wonderful film. The coach of which of the team featured in that was here last week at Ragtag, in fact, and that was an amazing documentary. And it played at Hollywood. It played, you know, all over the country. So I think they're onto something. I mean, it looks like ESPN's 30 for 30 series, which has done them really well.
I mean, I applaud them for announcing the initiative, and if they follow through, you know, good for them and good for us. But Lee, to your point, I mean, the documentaries, at least the Hollywood, the ones that have aired in theaters that have actually performed well, are obviously the ones that are more controversial, whether they're from Michael Moore or the guy who's, you know, doing the one about Obama this year. So how do you square that with CNN's attempting to be seen as still a play-it-down-the-middle news organization?
I'm not sure that I do. And in that part of it, I mean, I think the accepted definition of docs, both by the filmmakers themselves and by audience members, is that most docs come at you with a point of view. But so let's take one that a lot of members of our audience may have seen, a film like Born into Brothels, which is about young girls who are born into a life of brothels in India. I have a hard time seeing CNN air that anytime before 10 p.m. at night, because there are a lot of very unsavory, difficult images that are attached to that film. And so, and I think Born into Brothels is a wonderful film. Don't get me wrong about that. But it's just the subject matter that I think is going to be very tough for them.
I agree with you that it will be tough. In some ways, I think for that reason, among many, it would be great to see them try it, because we need to have a conversation about what you can say on television, on commercial over-the-air television, whether it's news programs or not. Well, finally this week, an announcement on live TV that would have been unheard of just a couple of years ago. Sam Champion, the longtime weatherman on ABC's Good Morning America, shared with his audience this past week that he is engaged to marry his boyfriend, Rubem Robier.
We walked out on the street and everyone was like, hey, congratulations, because we didn't know that it had gone everywhere. And we're like, hi, thank you. But I mean, everybody, the nicest thing. And thank you guys for the tweets and the Facebook and the just coming up on the street and saying the most wonderful things.
And making George and I your best men. That's terrific.
Well, as you could tell from the banter at the end of that clip, Champion's colleagues weren't at all reserved in their on-air support. And coming on the heels of Anderson Cooper officially coming out earlier this year, I wonder, Lee, if we've reached the tipping point in how the news media, both internally and externally, deal with gender equality and same-sex marriage.
Well, internally and externally here may be a different thing, and we're adding the audience, which may be a third. So first I'm going to start by quoting my daughter. That's so yesterday. It's like, really? This is news? Let's get over it. I listened to some of the comments by some of the people who are running for public office, and I think that this is a battle that we have not yet quite finished fighting, let alone come to a conclusion on. The media are caught in the middle.
But I wonder if we're close to stopping the fight in the media themselves. I mean, this GMA announcement to me, Charles, did seem different. I mean, Anderson Cooper came out, but to a newspaper reporter, and he waited a long time before he addressed the topic on TV. But here's Champion and his colleagues talking about it as just another joyful occasion worth sharing with their viewers.
It felt long overdue, as Lee said, but also you're right. I think it did represent a real turning point for tolerance of equal marital rights. And it's really significant from a cultural sort of zeitgeist perspective.
Well, I guess we'll see whether or not we have more of a substantial following in this regard. But it just seems to me that news media have decided that this is an issue that there's not much question about anymore, and so we're going to treat it as a normal course of human affairs.
And when that begins to happen in places like Fox or on the Weekly Standard, I'll believe you.
All right. Well, we're going to have to make that the last word for this week. Thanks for listening and watching. As always, we've posted articles and videos related to our topics on the Views page under the Talk Shows tab on the KBIA website. We welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions for us by email at views@kbia.org. Our technical team makes it work for us every week behind the scenes. They are director Travis McMillan with RJI and audio engineer Pat Akers with KBIA. I'm Mike McKean. Please join Charles, Lee, and me again next Wednesday for another edition of KBIA's Views of the News.